I mean, it started with Botham John. When Botham John was killed in Dallas by a Dallas police officer, it took a long period of time for this this chief of police to take any action. Now here with Brandon, this happened to Brandon on May 30th. This police chief has not apologized to Brandon, has not apologized to any other citizen who has been harmed by a Dallas police officer.
And we're going to have to leave it there, but I thank you for being with us, Attorney Darrell Washington. Brandon, thank you so much for joining us. I know how difficult this is. Brandon Sines, shot in the face by Dallas police during a recent protest with a, quote, less than lethal weapon, lost his left eye, several teeth, shattered multiple facial fractures. We'll link to your Brandon's GoFundMe page that his mother has set up to pay for his medical bills. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
KBOO Portland.
It's true. You are. It's 8 a.m., and that means it's time for the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show right here on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
We're still alive, I think.
Yeah, I am. I can't speak for you.
Well, how do you know you're dead?
You know, that'll take up too much of today's show.
No, that'd be really complicated and get involved in religion and whatnot.
Yeah, indeed. We don't want to go there.
No.
Instead, we'll just talk about plague and really bad leadership.
Yeah, plague and really bad leadership is right. I actually want to kick off by saying that it now is clear, according to the New York Times and other sources, that the United States botched the early testing and the efforts to find out whether or not there was, in fact, a plague. And the result of this botching, CDC and others refusing to really examine the issue, has resulted in an enormous problem. The United States is now the largest nation suffering from the pandemic.
Yeah, it's about 1 in 5 of every new cases worldwide now is here in the United States.
That's reassuring, though, because we have the best of everything.
That's, all irony and sarcasm aside, that's a staggering and astonishing
statistic. Well, it's stupid. I mean, it just doesn't... A failure to rely on science, which is generally the attitude of this administration toward everything, is leading us down a path where a lot of people... young people as well as old people are going to die.
It's true. I suppose we should probably mention that this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
You should mention that.
I should. KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. Number to call 503-231-8187. The number to contribute to this radio station, perhaps even more important. It's not a number. It's a web address, kboo.fm, and click on the donate button.
Yeah, and I want to add, people think this is free. Well, we have a staff, we have equipment, we have all kinds of things to maintain, and in fact, it's expensive on the air, and this station will not survive without contributions. That's kind of an imperative that I want to give people. Now, you know, maybe you can only afford $10, maybe you can only afford $10,000, whatever. The contributions, which normally we beg and whine for, are not being begged and whined for because we don't have a place to go and beg and whine. That means it's up to you. It's up to you and your moral commitment to have this honest reporting, this honest entertainment, this honest music that you will not get anywhere else.
It's true. So, Joe, tell us why and how the country has been so systemically and systematically bad at responding to this outbreak.
Well, essentially what it comes down to is that the Fed, the CDC specifically, blocked all efforts to really analyze the data, to really look at what was happening early on. And if you remember, the voice of the government, unfortunately, is Donald Trump, and he was saying stupid things like, oh, it'll be gone with the wind, you know, kind of quoting a bad Southern popular movie. And he said, you know, he said that this whole thing is nothing, truly nothing. And recently he said, and now they're saying he was joking, but he wasn't, that we would be much better off if we never tested for the coronavirus.
Well, he's since come out and affirmed that, no, he was not joking.
No, he's serious. He's, yeah. I would say he's deadly serious.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's also admitted that he has, his administration has deliberately slowed the pace of testing so as not to be humiliated by more positive results.
Right. I mean, he is one of those people who has followed the pattern of the three monkeys, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. But he is always speaking evil.
Indeed.
And he certainly doesn't want to hear anything that he hasn't got programmed into his meager mind. And, you know, I'm running out of nasty things to say about Donald Trump. I could not have believed a few years ago that an error like this would be made. Now, I want to make this clear. This isn't about disagreements on major issues, where I have certainly, and you have, really been distressed by the behavior of the government. It isn't about the Bush-Cheney thing or anything like that, which was pretty horrible. It's, in fact, about a combination of stupidity and incompetence and let's add in some racism and some sexism and some homophobia, and you get this extremely stupid result.
Stupid is a good word to characterize it. I don't want to blow right by this, though, before we stop for a moment and acknowledge the scope of this here.
Okay.
The President of the United States has admitted that he depressed the ability of the federal government, working in concert with state and local governments, to implement a widespread testing and contact tracing plan because he felt doing so would mean his numbers would be bad. Now, I want everybody to pause and reflect on this for a moment. Imagine any other human being occupying the White House making a similar claim, and imagine the response that we should expect in a typical period of time in conditions that are approaching normal.
Well,
anyone else would have absolutely been roasted alive, most likely removed from office and prosecuted.
And maybe he had to run naked through the streets of all the cities in America while people threw rotten fruit at him.
Well, that's a little bit medieval. I'd like to think we're better than
that. No, I like medieval with this guy. He is a really stupid man. And he really has possibly the dumbest worldview of any president of the United States, including the ones who allowed slavery. And I'm saying that advisedly. This is really, really weird. And to me, amazing is that it actually has a strong fan base, and it's very distressing to me because I've always thought people, when push comes to shove, could be logical or rational or reasonable, and we don't see any of that going on with Trump.
No, to be fair, I think most Americans are capable of being rational and reasonable. Unfortunately, that's not what we see guiding the tiller of the ship of state at the moment. But I want to follow up on something you said earlier. You mentioned that the CDC, one of the reasons behind our failure to adequately test and contact trace, was that the CDC refused to act on the data at its disposal. Now, what I'm wondering is, was that an internal CDC decision, or was that a political decision handed down by leadership in either the CDC itself or within the Bureau of Health and Human Services?
Well, as I've carefully read these articles, it's not exactly clear. But what seems clear is that bureaucrats, particularly high-end bureaucrats, have seen what happens if they bust the Trump trend. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a psychological imperative not to contradict the idiocy at the head chair.
I see. So it's your sense that these were not CDC scientists refusing to act on the data at their disposal, but rather political appointees at the head of the department.
Well, that's my assumption. It's not really clear, because one of the things that we see with this particular government is the intensity of its ability to muddy information.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it's really important to understand that this government, while a lot of information is dumped out there, at the same time, that information becomes unclear and becomes impossible to get real, serious data. But what is now emerging is that the CDC failed to do something. In fact, it actively failed to do what would be logical, looking at the possibility of the epidemic.
Now, and this problem we're talking about is separate and apart from the actual operational error that the CDC made in the beginning when the first round of test kits they produced were faulty.
Well, I can go through the stuff. On January 10th, World Health Organization, which I think Trump has kicked us out of or something, anyway, approved testing for a testing regimen for the public, and then in late January, the first cases began to appear, and then the CDC testing is approved by the Federal Drug Administration, and about 90 tests are sent out, and nobody liked it, and then they blocked it, and I don't want to, it's a long list of efforts bureaucratically and informally to terrify and essentially stop the process of scientific evaluation of what is crucially something that needs science.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, in fact, the Seattle people were hurt in the process, were dismissed, were essentially made to look like fools when they weren't. In fact, it's because of the early work at Seattle that things aren't as bad as they could be.
No, that's very true. There's a lot of places in the country where things are not as bad as they could be, mostly thanks to the number of people who are willing to participate rigorously in social distancing protocols. Now, we know that didn't happen everywhere in the country, and we know that a number of places in the country have reopened their economies prematurely, and we're seeing skyrocketing rates of new cases and increasing rates of death in many of those places.
Well,
it's entirely predictable, and it was entirely predicted.
Right. By late February, in the Seattle region, they really knew what was happening. And they were blocked from making an urgent effort nationally, enormous effort by the administration to muddy the waters to the extent that many people still believe, and this is to me incomprehensible, but nevertheless the case, that the virus isn't real.
Right.
How many people, 6,000 people only, 6,000 people showed up for Trump's silly talk on the 20th, and those people, I believe, honestly believe that science is nothing.
Yeah, it's astonishing. It's astonishing at a time in history when science really needs to be everything.
Well, there are people we have to remember that don't believe there was ever a moon landing.
This is true. I want to go back for a second to that early run of test kits produced by the CDC, which turned out to be faulty.
Yeah.
So that was a stumble from the get-go, but really that was a problem we could recover from. We have an immense technical and production capacity for this sort of thing, right? We have public health labs, we have academic research centers, we have labs in the private sector, all of whom could have been corralled into public service to address this. All of them needed approval, an emergency approval by the FDA. But those OKs, that approval never came from the federal government. So we had a situation where even within one cabinet department, Health and Human Services, you had the CDC and the FDA not talking to each other, not coordinating with each other, and we missed that critical period from about early February to early to mid-March, in which we needed to ramp up and get in place testing and contact tracing so that our disease curve had we done these things, would have looked more like, say, Germany, or even much more optimistically, South Korea. The problem is we didn't do that. We never got our federal government coordinated. And this is a critical piece of the puzzle that I don't think gets enough attention. We have something called the War Production Act. You probably heard of that. Yeah, Joe. It's where the federal government can reach out to private industry and compel them to produce certain things in service of a nationwide emergency, such as a war, such as a natural disaster, or such as a pandemic. But Trump never invoked that piece of legislation. Why? Because invoking that piece of legislation intrudes on the sovereignty of the private sector. And I think that there were many leaders amongst the business community who were unwilling to have that precedent set. They're not willing to let the government come to them and tell them what they must produce, even as hundreds of thousands of Americans are dying around them. So we have a problem, a combination of ineptitude and narcissism at the bureaucratic level, and also classism amongst the ruling class that conspired to put us in the hole that we're in right now.
Well, the irony is, at this point, now, right today, we are discovering the horror of what Trump is trying to do. For example, Stephen Miller is busy creating legislation, creating rules out of the White House to get rid of all foreign workers. And we're talking about everybody from people who pick grapes to people who do very important scientific work at the very highest levels. And they're not going to let anybody in to do any of that work starting now through the end of the year. And if Trump gets elected, that'll continue forever.
No more green cards, no more work visas. Pandemic go to waste. Don't let a pandemic go to waste. If it gives you opportunity to keep brown people out of the country, well, you take that opportunity.
Right. And it's all actually contradicting the classic notions of the rationality of capitalism. Ironically.
All right, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're talking about the systemic failure of the federal government to respond adequately to the defining event of our times. One event, of course, that we're still in the midst of. I also want to turn in a little while to what's going on here in Oregon in terms of new coronavirus cases. Joel, if you could expand on what you're just mentioning, the prerogatives of capitalism. What do you mean by that?
Well, look, one of the things that is argued, I mean, the thing I learned in school, and I think all of us did because we're all propagandized by the system, is that capitalism is, with all its faults, the most rational system to deliver goods and services at reasonable prices to a large workforce. This has always been the great belief that rationalized a lot of the cruelty, including racism, that characterizes our society. Now, what if you discover, as Thomas Piketty from France and others have, that in fact it's not so rational, that in fact it inevitably hurts people and doesn't produce the best results, and in fact doesn't produce the best products? That seems to be the case. Not that we are, as a culture, willing to have a reasonable discussion of that. And this is, in so many ways, an example of the stupidity of our system. Remember that in Europe, mostly Northern Europe, but in most of Europe, the fact of the matter is you have a national health care system. Now, sometimes it's attached to jobs, as in Holland. Sometimes it's attached directly to the government, as in Denmark. But in all those systems, everyone gets covered. And the result of that is things like this can be dealt with rationally and quickly. The same is true, by the way, of South Korea. Now, instead, we have a system that totally rewards incentives of private insurance companies, and those insurance companies have an enormous disincentive not to discuss really serious. And it really is a failing of the system as a whole. And it is a great example of the limitations, serious limitations, of the system. Now, you don't have to, and I want to make this clear, you do not have to move away from capitalism to move toward a social democracy. That's not a requirement. What you do have to do is separate out those things which are inherently unwise to be made profitable and better to be made social services from those things which are, in fact, very much part of the profit system. I mean, I'm not going to get upset about what kind of sneakers are available, and I'm not going to complain that there's too many, although I personally think there are. But that is irrelevant to the actual situation. We are a nation right now that is so much in need of a national health care system. And I don't hear anybody saying that. I don't hear anybody saying that outside of the small left communities.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
So you know, so years ago when I thought I was going to become a sociologist in epidemiology, I discovered these things, and they were academic for me because things were, okay. Now we discovered the real impact of this lousy healthcare system. Not bad for getting a heart valve repair, not bad for a lot of things, but terrible for serving the masses of people in a situation where you've got to persuade people that they must, for example, get themselves tested, where they must isolate. All that is all countered by the insanity of a boss man who proclaims that we must open the economy right away. And as soon as that happens, as soon as it starts to happen, we see soaring numbers of people getting the virus.
Yes. Speaking of soaring numbers of people getting the virus, here in Multnomah County, this past Friday, June the 19th, also known as Juneteenth, which has also become a paid holiday for a number of organizations around the country.
I want to see June 19th become a national holiday.
I absolutely would too. Let's ditch Columbus Day, and change Columbus Day.
We don't have Columbus Day at Oregon, I don't think.
No, we don't. But here's what we ought to do: we ought to change Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day, and that should be a paid holiday for everybody. And we should add Juneteenth as a paid holiday for everybody as well.
Yeah,
that is my proposal.
I agree with you.
All right, so on June 19th, Multnomah County reported a new single-day record in new COVID-19 cases, 49, a record that was eclipsed 2 days later this past Sunday when we posted 84 cases. So this spike in new cases is happening just as the county is entering its first phase of reopening, a phase that was delayed by the Governor Kate Brown for a week because of rising COVID-19 cases. So we're entering what could be a really dicey period here in Oregon. Now, I was out and about a little bit yesterday, and I saw some of the restaurants in business that have now partially reopened. And so I checked it out. There's a restaurant here in my neighborhood, for example, that has set up temporary outdoor seating in one of the streets adjacent to its building. Mm-hmm. It's part of a program I think the state is implemented for communities around Oregon. So that they can have more outdoor seating space, which is not just marginally safer, we're learning, but it's a whole lot safer to be outdoors in the COVID-19 outbreak than it is to be indoors. So the restaurant I was checking out was only admitting patrons inside if they were picking up a takeout order. Otherwise, they were met by a masked receptionist who was directing them to outside seating and then proceeding with business as usual. Now, that said, there are a lot of people sitting in fairly close proximity to one another, although all the tables were 6 feet apart, eating and drinking as if everything was normal. So I guess we will find out whether or not this is a good idea.
Well, and what's really disgusting aspect of this, the disease is terrible, and people of all ages can, in fact, die from it. But the largest die-off is among the elderly. And essentially, the elderly are not a strong force in the workforce except for the very rich. That means that people are going to let it go. Hey, if you lose grandpa, so what? Or grandma. I don't want to be sexist here.
Yeah, it's true. I think it almost seems as if we're collectively shrugging our shoulders and moving on with life.
Well, it's inhumane. It's fundamentally yet another stage in capitalism, and I have to say it, in capitalism, that is inhumane and unnecessary. Those two together, inhumane and unnecessary, characterizes the current behavior of the United States in the face of the virus.
Yeah, the part about this that distresses me the most is that I've heard people talk about a first wave of the virus, a second wave of the virus. If you look at the infection patterns in the United States since the beginning of this outbreak, it's pretty clear that we are still in the midst of the first wave and that we were only limitedly successful in flattening the curve, which was the whole purpose of everybody staying home for 3 months. And the deep irony of this, the thing that saddens me the most about this, is that evidence indicates that this was all for nothing. This unprecedented collective sacrifice that we all made is all going to be for nothing. Because right now you're looking at a number of the red states that have opened, looking at re-implementing stay-at-home orders, shutting everything back down again for an indeterminate length of time, all because we were collectively too impatient, too stupid, or too allied to tribal identities to fully get on board with the necessary protocols. You even see that now. The people who are willing to wear a mask versus the people who are not willing to wear a mask in public, that falls out largely along the divides that map our cultural schism in the United States.
Right, and it's a politicization of science.
It's exactly
really
what it is.
Stupid. Obviously, the masks are, you know, kind of a weird fashion statement, to put it simply. But, and by the way, it's interesting that it is becoming a fashion statement. I see lots of designs out there. But the thing is that the President of the United States, by his arrogant behavior, his incredible stupidity, and the support that he has from a lot of people that he picks to run the government while he gets rid of the competent people, and that's happening a lot, this is a situation just made for a disaster. And I actually personally, I'm always dark-minded, but, you know, I think personally there's not a one stage, two stage, three stage to this thing. This is a pandemic which will be with us, I think, forever.
Yeah, I don't think it will be here with us forever, but it's going to be with us longer than we had hoped, and it's going to be with us longer than we had predicted it might be, because, as I just finished detailing, we took our foot off the brakes much too soon. Case in point, the president recently held, just over the weekend, a rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Now, there's some backstory to this that we've gone into on previous shows, so here it is very quickly. He had originally scheduled that rally for June the 19th, Juneteenth, as we talked about a few minutes ago, which, of course, commemorates the day that the slaves in Galveston, Texas, were read by federal troops the text of the Emancipation Proclamation. And Galveston was just about the farthest flung slave-holding area in the United States at the
time.
Well,
in fact, slaves were moved deliberately as the South realized it was losing the war.
Yes.
The slaves were moved forcibly into Texas where their labor would be free as opposed to being paid labor.
Right. So Juneteenth marks that moment in time when everybody got the news about emancipation and it was, and officially word had passed over the land. And that Juneteenth has been observed as a holiday in the African-American community for a long, long time. So Trump originally picked Juneteenth as the day for his rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The location also is problematic, because Tulsa is the site of the bloodiest act of racial violence in our nation's incredibly bloody history.
Did you know they bombed? Do you know that they bombed businesses from the air?
Yes, I do. I know that. Absolutely.
Incredible! It's incredible.
A quick sidebar.
I don't understand why the history books that teach kids in high school and so on don't even mention it.
Yeah, it's astonishing, and I was just going to mention that. A whole lot. People didn't hear of Juneteenth until the past few weeks and didn't know about the Tulsa massacre until the last few weeks. It's astonishing. So because of those two reasons, timing and location, the Trump administration decided to reschedule its rally in Tulsa. Now, when you consider those two factors, time and location, there's no way that that was an accident. There's no way that that was simply a mistake on the part of an administration that has people like Stephen Miller in it. In fact, I would go so far as to suggest that it's entirely possible that Stephen Miller planned to have this rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma on Juneteenth for exactly the horrible reasons that you might suspect, to send a message to people to remind them all who's still in charge. Okay, so that's the context. So we get to this rally. The rally is non-masked people. They're asking attendees to not wear a mask. The only precaution that's being taken when people arrive is that they're being subjected to a quick forehead temperature scan to make sure that they're not spiking a fever, that they're not actively carrying and transmitting the coronavirus. Other than that, no problem. Everybody come on inside to this huge arena and pack yourselves in close to each other and breathe the same air for a couple of hours while the president bloviates. What could possibly go wrong? Among the many ironies of this, of course, is the crowd was entirely underwhelming. There were shots of vast expanses of empty seats, and the president apparently has gone into a multi-day pout because not enough people showed up to his little party in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I actually watched his performance, and I don't want to claim some super expertise, but he looked very much like a crazy guy.
Yeah, very much like a crazy guy.
That's a scientific evaluation. This dude is nuts.
Yes. And he said a lot of very crazy and hateful stuff, and that is out there to be seen. So I encourage you to go out there and take a look at some footage from President Trump's rally. Now, I mentioned that wearing a mask and not wearing a mask is something that has tended to fall out along the lines of our cultural divide.
You mean the scientific-minded versus the idiots?
Yes, not just the scientific-minded versus the idiot.
I'm not going to be kind about this. I've lost my temper on this, and I think I'm reasonable in losing it. It's stupid not to do what you can do to limit the spread of this virus and to keep yourself safe. And it boggles my mind that a bunch of crazies with AK-47s and so on show up at state capitals acting like somehow it's a political move not to wear a mask.
Yes, it's a political move. Yes, it does fall out along the lines of the rational versus the stupid, and it also falls out along the lines of I'm a member of the less rational tribe, or I'm the member of the right, inward-looking nationalist tribe. And as simplistic as that sounds, it appears to be the case. We are really looking at an America in the 21st century in which people will not protect themselves and others from a deadly disease because they want to own the libs. I'm at a loss for words, but there we are.
How can you be at a loss for words on the radio?
I know it's a distressing situation.
It's a very paradoxical situation.
It is. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I would love to hear from those of you who have been taking part in the protests here in Portland. That is an ongoing situation.
Which I think we should be pretty proud of. And I want to give a shout-out to Rose City Justice and other groups who are allied. This has been a brilliant campaign where it's so logical. You gather at one location, the old Washington High School place. It's been decided ahead of time where everyone's going to go. They march to that place, they rally at that place, and they disperse from that place. It's well organized. It's extremely exciting. It's very positive. It involves lots and lots and lots of young people, because let's face it, the young people are willing to march those distances, and it's totally, as far as I can tell, integrated in terms of age and race and all that, ethnicity, all that. And I think it's great. And I don't know how long it can be kept up, because it's hard. It's a difficult thing. But
I think it's
done
great too.
Very well. And I really think that we have good government in this case.
Yeah.
Because it says, keep the police out unless there's trouble.
Right. And again, here I'm speculating absent a body of sufficient evidence. But it appears that the people gathering in these protests around the country, even around the world, the fact that most of them, the vast majority of them, are wearing masks and face covering bodes very, very well for the consequences of these demonstrations. I'm not saying to you that gathering in large numbers outdoors, even with a mask or face covering, is a safe activity. But it appears, at least at this point in time, that it's safer than we initially feared. But that goes to show, if you take some elementary precautions, if you believe in science and you practice proper restraint of your droplets, things aren't as dangerous as they would be otherwise.
No, it's really true. I mean, this is a wonderful, unfortunately, a huge laboratory test case of rationality versus crazy.
It is. You mentioned a second ago the participation of young people in these protests. I agree, it's wonderful. It is wonderful to see. But here's another reason that young people are out in large numbers. Consider your typical, say, mid-20-something person. For most of that person's life, the United States has been at war. We have been on a permanent war footing since early 2003.
A permanent war footing since 1940, actually.
Yes, true. But we have been engaged in active hostilities since our initial retaliation after the September 11th attack. And over the course of that mid-20-something's lifetime, not only have we been on a permanent war footing, but they have seen a global financial collapse a little more than 10 years ago. They have seen the outbreak of a pandemic that has brought the global economy to its knees. And they are looking at a future that has none of the safeguards, none of the prospects, none of the security that has characterized the American experience of previous generations. Young people are looking at inheriting not a whole hell of a lot in terms of what our society has to offer them, in terms of the options available to them professionally, in terms of their prospects for material advancement. It's no wonder that white people are turning out in droves, because they're looking at a system that is fundamentally flawed and that leaves them high and dry with nothing to hope for.
Well, that's one of the most interesting aspects. There used to be a kind of an unspoken understanding, even if you were a good liberal, that, you know, having a pale skin had some certain advantages, are hard to deny. If you had an income of middle class or better, you had certain advantages, hard to deny. But now, because a disease is an equal opportunity, well, that's not quite fair. It is now an opportunity that strikes all people, but particularly, I think I should emphasize this, persons of color who have not got the opportunities to do the things of distancing and so on. It is clear the structure of America. It is clear that it is a racist and classist society, and that the kind of capitalism we have cannot effectively deliver the goods the way I used to think, unfortunately, that it did.
Yeah, you're correct. You could also argue, and you would be correct, that the system, the capitalist system under which we all live, is functioning precisely as designed. It is enriching the ruling class to the detriment of everybody else. And it is organized to do that, and that is what it is doing.
Yeah.
We have a written message from Jack, who writes at the Facebook page.
We also have a call waiting.
Abe and Joe. Masks in public, what does that mean? While driving, walking in the park, entering a public building? And what about the testing, now proven to be 20 to 30% unreliable? I'm feeling cynical about it all. Antisocial, already antisocial pre-COVID, and I didn't care to share with my fellow Americans the air they breathe. I would say to you, Jack, probably the best bet for you is to stay home. That's an entirely acceptable and even laudable decision right now. But to answer your question, what does that mean, masks in public? Well, for me, what my family and I have been doing is that we bring our masks with us when we go out in public. If we're walking around or biking around, we typically won't wear them. But if we are approaching a group of people, we're going to pass on the sidewalk, we will mask up as we go by those people. If we have to duck into a store, we will mask up. It's pretty much there for you if you use your common sense. If you come within 6 feet of somebody, put on your mask. Pretty simple.
It is pretty simple. And you know what? I'm amazed that there aren't more bank robberies.
And that non sequitur is the perfect segue to our first phone call. Good morning.
We have Bruce on the line.
Thanks for the laugh, Joe. I have always chosen to get my news off radio as opposed to the packaged TV news. But this morning, doing laundry, I turned on OPB, where an author was interviewed. She just wrote Jesus and John Wayne book is the title. And so Stavinsky asked her, well, how do Trump supporters view his failings in regards to the pandemic? And she said something that just twigged for me. Well, on Christian radio, they're barely touching the subject. And, you know, someone asked Patton during World War II, why are you reading Mein Kampf? And he said, how else will I know what my enemy's thinking? So, you know, it's just to see where the other side is coming from is they're not seeing that, like, tobacco company exemplary of capitalism, they lose their customers. So they target cigarettes now for 9- and 10-year-olds. So, you know, we need to see the landscape. And thanks for, Abe, thanks for the common sense rule with masks. That's what most of us oldsters are doing. Love the show. Thank you.
Hey, yeah. Thanks very much for the call.
And I might add, this is a new industry. Speaking of capitalism, making masks is a thing.
It is a thing. And you know what? It needs to be a thing because people need masks.
It's a cottage industry.
So there's a rational free market solution. Right?
Well, somewhat. I would think that somewhat. So I would think the mask should be actually something that everybody can get just by asking.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think we're a pretty long way from that.
Well,
I also know that a lot of people are making their own. There's somebody here in my household who's been making masks for the rest of us, and I know from social media that it's fairly widespread. So people are getting industrious.
Well,
and that's good to see.
Let's give a little bit of a shout out to manufacturers who have turned away from making stuff that is clearly profitable to making masks for a while, and other kinds of services of medical equipment. It is the case that many people are being virtuous and positive in struggling against the virus, but there is still this knot, K-N-O-T or N-O-T, of people who are so in denial, are so willing to, you know, to just not accept the reality of the situation because it doesn't fit their ideological bent. It's very distressing. And it's very scary.
People who have never known true oppression a minute in their lives are howling because they can't go get a haircut or get their nails done or go to the movies or whatever.
Well, it's not like I have a complaint. I got weird hair and I can't get a haircut.
Yeah, you do have weird hair.
I know. Everybody notices that. Oh, they don't even notice me, period. I'm just being egotistical. Anyway.
Yeah, there's another aspect to all of this. Here's a little glimpse behind the veil, listeners, Abe and Joe. We've been faced over the past several weeks, you know, with literally so much to discuss and so many angles from which to analyze current events that we find ourselves sometimes saying, well, you know, what should we talk about on this week's show? I don't know. It's like being at a buffet line and you just can't make up your mind. But one of the things that has become increasingly clear in recent weeks is that the president is operating from a position of diminishing power. His power is on the wane. His ability to influence is on the wane. And the thousands of empty seats in his Tulsa arena is just one indication of that. How politics works, and that's speaking very broadly here, politics as a blunt instrument works like this. If you're a politician and you're able to exert power and sustain that power, then that multiplies your power. So if you're able to do something and then keep on doing it, that tends to reinforce your position of power and authority. It's just you're able to do more and more and more.
Right, it's that's sort of a really important rule. Resistance overcome makes you much more powerful.
Indeed, it's sort of a feedback loop. Now, we've seen the president in recent weeks attempting to exert power, but not being able to sustain it at all. And what that is doing is inflicting a negative feedback loop on him and diminishing the powerful position from which he is operating. Now, I want to point out in particular the shenanigans that happened in the Southern District of New York in the federal prosecutor's office over the weekend. I don't know how closely you followed this, Joe.
It's a
fascinating little turn of events. So the Attorney General Bill Barr, who is absolutely in the tank for President Trump, put out a statement.
Look, I want to be a little bit inappropriate politically. He is a fat clown.
Oh, I'll just leave that there. Okay. So Attorney General Barr, right, exactly. Attorney General Barr last Friday night issued a false statement. It's, let's call it what it is, a lie. The lie was that the U.S. attorney heading the Southern District of New York office, a guy by the name of Jeff Berman, had stepped down from his post.
An appointee of Trump, I might add.
An appointee of Trump, a direct appointee of Trump, who didn't go through Senate confirmation, but that's another story entirely. So Barr released this lie. Berman learned about it through the news that he had been fired. So he came out with a statement that very same day, Friday night, saying that no, he had not stepped aside from his office, nor did he have any intention of stepping aside from his office.
Nor was he directed. He was not personally directed to abandon his job.
No. Barr came back and doubled down on his original lie with a second lie, which said, oh, well, the president has directed that this guy be removed from his office. That also turned out not to be true. And Trump admitted so publicly that he did not direct that Berman be fired. Now, eventually, he did come around and ask Berman to step aside. Berman now has stepped aside. But the reason for all of this was that the Southern District of New York is following up on a number of criminal investigations tied to the president's criminal misdeeds, both with Russia and with the Ukraine affair over which he was impeached. In particular, the Southern District of New York has indicted two of Rudy Giuliani's close associates and is investigating Rudy Giuliani for acting as an unofficial and illegal foreign agent in the context of the Ukraine affair. So in other words, a whole bunch of criminal investigations that have the possibility to come back and hit Trump hard. So what does he do? He does what he always does and tries to immunize himself from any consequences by removing the people who would hold him accountable. In this case, U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Berman. So at this point, Trump has trashed the Constitution and our norms and our assumptions of what the proper exercise of political power looks like. He's trashed that to such an extent that this hardly seems surprising. But
yeah,
make no mistake.
I want to interrupt you for just a second. I want to point out that when things are nasty, when things are really bad, look at the history of Nazism and other forms of fascism. The fact of the matter is that under those circumstances, things that would previously be absolutely untenable, would be immoral, become normative and moral, and you no longer have a firm understanding of what is right and wrong.
Yes. And again, in any other set of circumstances, with any other president, removing a prosecutor who holds your future in his hands would raise alarm bells across the land and probably result in that president being either removed from office or pressured to resign. It is that serious. But in the Trump world, it's just another transgression.
Yeah, and I want to add to that. Understanding how opportunistic and selfish and weird this presidency is, I am not sure, and this is, I'm serious here, I am not sure that Donald Trump will acknowledge it if, per se, let's say, he loses the election on November 3rd. I'm not sure he'll give up the presidency. I'm not sure that anything that used to be part of our routinized, rational legal system, for better or worse, will hold with this guy. Because he is, the president is really weird, and he's getting weirder. The thing that happened on Saturday, the lousy rally, there's a lot of reasons why that happened, which I'm not going to spend time on right now. But the fact of the matter is that he can't stand it when he is not beloved. He is a great imitation of the leader of North Korea, the beloved leader.
That's probably why he admires him so much. So I mentioned that after his very underwhelming rally in Tulsa, the president went into a funk for a little while, but he came out swinging on Twitter.
It's not a funk, it's a snit.
A snit. He came out swinging on Twitter, railing against vote by mail. He knows he's probably going to lose the election in November. There's a push right now, unprecedented, driven largely by the fact that we're existing in the midst of a pandemic right now. There's a push across the nation to institute vote by mail everywhere, which is a great idea. Trump knows, though, that he's going to lose. So he's putting a whole lot of rhetorical muscle into the notion that this transition to vote by mail means the end of democracy, that fraud will be so widespread that the results of any election conducted by vote by mail are suspect. He has already stated this publicly a number of times. So he's already planting the seeds to contest the results of the election in November, and look for him to do that, especially if it's a close election.
Well, and it's convenient in another way, because he alone among presidents wants to do away with something which is constitutional, that is the post office.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of calls, boys.
Sure. Before we go to the call, I got another written communication here anonymously. I was in Wisconsin last week. It looked like MTV spring break. Bars and restaurants were packed. No masks, no distancing. Insane. Yes,
well,
that is insane.
Cheese heads, what can you say?
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go to the phones.
All right. Francis is up first. Go ahead, Francis, you're live.
Hi.
Good morning.
I'm not sure what your topic was today because I tuned in late.
Well, I'm not
is
sure what
about
math either, except outrage.
It's the same topic it's been for a while.
Yeah, I'm continuing to be outraged that our Congress is allowing this man to proceed with his charade. And as long as the Congress is weak and has another agenda, which I'm not sure what it is, other than being a corporate surrogate, I'm not sure why they're allowing him to continue. But he serves their purpose. But what got me to call was when you were speaking of why young white people are protesting. They are protesting, the majority of them, because Black Lives Matter. And they are really, the ones that I've talked to are really, 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 really pissed that this is still going on. And those my generation are really, really pissed that it's still going on because we've dealt with this for over 50 years. And the young people do not like, they've been sold a bill of goods suggesting that everything is just peachy keen in the United States and Black lives do matter, because they see very well that they have been oppressed for a long, 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 long time, and they're not happy with that. And that's enough. That is absolutely enough.
I mean, look, Francis, I agree with you. Look, 400 years of slavery and quasi-slavery based on skin color. That is evil. That is absolutely the essence of evil. And it cannot and it should not be tolerated anymore. And it's about time that everybody, white, black, whatever, recognize the evil of this and strike out against it.
All right.
I agree.
We also have Cassandra waiting. Cassandra, are you still with us?
Hey, thanks for the call, Francis. Let's go to Cassandra. Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, I'm probably going to say something that's going to get people just going, oh my God, she's an incredible lefty, but God, I think that's a given.
Let your flag fly, Cassandra.
Yeah, here's my thought. We're all playing by bogus rules.
It sounded
rules.
Like you had made your point and then that the hosts were...
Say that again?
Hello? Go ahead, Cassandra.
I'm still... Okay. All right, if you go to a bank that you know is going to take your money and invest it in their own pockets, you would not put your money in that bank. I mean, you know full well ahead that it's rigged against you. They're taking your money, you'll never see it again, and they're putting it in their own pockets. No one in their right mind would do that, right? Therefore, why are we still playing by the rules of this political system that is obviously broken? Nazi Germany did not get voted out. It had to be stopped. Same with Italy. You know, fascism, wherever it has lived, has not been voted out typically. It has to be stopped. But we keep playing by the rules, and we are all expecting Trump not to bow out gracefully and prove that we're still in a democracy, because we know we're not. The Constitution has been trashed, and to try to rebuild it within the system is playing by their rules. I was a Democrat. I am no longer. I will vote for Biden because we've got to get him out. But do I honestly think this is going to work? No. And I think most of us are in that pool, if we would be honest. The idea that the buck stops somewhere, you know, Truman said it, but honestly, it stops with every single one of us. Every single one of us has to stop living in a fantasy, pinch ourselves, wake up, and say, this is not working because they've rigged the game against us. We've all gone to Vegas, we're playing blackjack, and they're giving us booze.
I agree with you, Cassandra.
Whatever you want to call it.
Our constitutional order as it exists is insufficient to meet the needs of the day or to ensure equity for citizens in the United States. So I want to ask you this.
Yeah.
How do we change it significantly and satisfactorily absent violent revolution? Because that really is the key. How do we do this without killing people?
Right, before you answer that, I just want to warn people. Holding the Constitutional Convention is just exactly what the very powerful rich people want, because they know that they can manipulate that.
Yes, because capitalism, the root of all evil, is just an evolutionary step of feudalism. This is not me saying it. This is history proving it. This is well known among historians. This is not a system that works. And this country was set up based on capitalism, feudalism. It was for white men to profit, to keep their property, and of course they enslaved black people and called them property, and now we want to protect that. And then we just keep it going, Jim Crow laws and what have you, and it's still the same damn game. Okay, how do we get rid of it? Honestly, I wish I had a crystal ball and I could tell you the perfect way that no blood would be shed, but blood's already being shed, and it's by those who are in power. So here's my thought. One bright spot in this whole entire thing. We've lost the Supreme Court. They're gone. They're bought. We've lost the Republican
Party. I don't know. Supreme Court just turned out a series of decisions last week.
Yeah, I think that's called patting your hand before they lower the boom. There are other bigger cases coming up that they're about to... I don't trust them. Flat out,
okay,
don't trust
them. Fair enough. Yeah, I don't trust them either. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the one bright spot that I have seen in this whole thing, we've lost our three-prong protection against, you know, checking each other. But the one thing that has not jumped on board with Trump, that has actually come up against him in a very mild way, but they've made it sternly clear that they are not going to be his military, is our military. Is there some way to appeal to them and say... I don't know how to do it. I wish I did.
Well, wait a minute. Are you suggesting a military dictatorship or something?
No. In other words, what I'm saying is, can we get him out and put scientists in charge for a while until we can reorient ourselves? No, I do not want. That's why military is always scary. It shouldn't exist, actually. I mean, in a perfect world, humans don't kill each other, but sadly, our species does.
A presidential ticket featuring Neil deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye the Science Guy, I would get behind that ticket in a heartbeat.
But that's not a choice right now.
No, it's not. But there's got to be a way when this man in November says, no, it's all rigged, I am not stepping down, la, 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 that we have to get him out. We cannot allow it. Otherwise, we literally are in a completely rigged game.
So I agree with you in part. We have to find a way. I think the important thing right now, between now and November 3rd, is to make damn sure that in terms of the legal and rational structure in the Constitution, this clown is a broken clown, and nobody's laughing anymore, and he's out of office.
Yeah, but
I don't care. I really have to say it. I don't care that that Biden is not the most swift, charismatic leader. I don't care that whatever. The fact of the matter is that this guy is a premier example of fascism, and he needs not to be in power.
I agree with you. I just wish that what I think is going to happen by November is that the coronavirus is going to burn us down so badly that hopefully even that tiny little minority that is still supporting Trump will back away from him. I'm hoping.
Well, there's irony, because if they don't wear masks, they'll be too sick to vote.
Yeah, but the
and
sad
they
part
won't
is
be allowed
too,
to vote by vote. Mail. Hey,
right.
They won't count.
Right, and as much as I'd like to say, as much as I'd like to be just totally vicious and say, burn, baby, burn, on the other hand, these people are going back out into their societies with family members and friends who do not have like minds as theirs often. I speak from experience. I am the renegade in my family of Trump, lovey, yeah. But they will interact. And they will bring down more people that are just as good. The coronavirus doesn't know good from evil. It just knows a source, a host. And
true.
Yeah, I don't know.
I hate to cut you off, Cassandra, but we're going to have to leave it there because we are out of time for today.
Okay.
But thank you for a wonderful call. A very
provocative. I want to say quickly. Give money to Cable or you won't be hearing us at all. Aside from just turning us off.
Wait, Joe.
And I want to again compliment the people from various organizations, including Rose City Justice. Marvelously organized, brilliantly done, very peaceful, very, very powerful. Good on you.
Indeed. Well, thank you, everybody who took part in today's conversation. Please keep wearing your mask. Please keep wearing your mask.